Hey, welcome to the Cornerstone Church Podcast, one of the many places that we love to declare Jesus.
We see you in your life living a life of resilient faith for all of your days, and we believe that listening to this message is going to be part of strengthening your faith journey.
Enjoy the message.
We are still in the Sermon on the Mount, the most incredible message that has ever been preached, so much so that it's taking us weeks of time to walk through it and unpack it. I'm excited to continue. You can turn to Matthew chapter 6 is where we're going to head this morning as we continue in it. And I think that this portion of scripture is at least as relevant, if not more relevant for us today than it was when Jesus first spoke it to its original audience. It's a great time of year. I know everyone is wrapping up all of their good summer plans. How many people's kids go back to school this week? If you have kids going back to school this week, I know the first early crowd is like, we're heading in this week. Whose next week is your week that you're heading back to school? Come on. And by the end of the month, everybody will be back in school. It's that time. There's way too much rejoicing from the parents at the moment. I heard the greatest shout that I've heard all morning from some parents who were like, hallelujah, it's time to get. I always feel like this time of year, it's not so much that even the school, I'm ready for schedule again. You know, like it's always fun at the beginning of summer and you're like, party time again. And then by this time of year, I'm like, we need some bedtimes. We need some morning structure. We need to know who's, let's get back on track. And as you're wrapping up your summer, then you're getting in all your good outdoor activities, all the fun stuff that you do. We went this weekend for a run. Phil and I did a run, and the boys rode bikes alongside of us at one of the metro parks, which is like peak summertime kid activity out there enjoying all of the outsideness. And as soon as we got done with our run, I promptly took a photo and posted my photo so that everyone knew that I had gone on a run and bike ride with the whole gang today, because that is now part of the equation of doing any type of exercise activity, is that you also then need to post that exercise activity so everyone else knows that you participated in it, and they can then in response like and respond to your exercise activities as a way of affirming your well done. A few weeks ago, this is how ridiculous I am. A few weeks ago, I had done an exercise activity, like, I don't know, in the morning. And it was kind of like late afternoon. And I was with a group of friends. And somehow the subject of our exercises came up. And I was like, and I want all of you to know that I noticed that I did my exercise like 7 hours ago. And not one of you has liked my workout in Strava yet. And I don't know what's going on, but I need everyone to give me some positive feedback, and I need my accolades in my app. What are you doing? There's the age-old philosophical question. If a tree falls in the woods and no one is there to hear it fall, does it even make a sound? If a millennial today drinks an artisan latte and does not post it for the whole world to enjoy, have they even drunk the latte? If you go out and do your workout and your friends and your neighbors don't know how many miles you ran, at what pace, did you even run the miles? If you get up and do some morning devotional time and you don't post that photo with the crisp morning light leaning in across your Bible pages, did you even do a morning devotional? Because we like the feedback that we get. We like the accolades and the responses that we get. And apparently this is not something that is unique to the social media era and age. Apparently this is not restricted to the internet time, because Jesus had some words in the Sermon on the Mount. If you look at Matthew 6, chapter 6, starting in verse 1, it reads like this: be careful not to practice your righteousness in front of others to be seen by them. Otherwise, you have no reward with your Father in heaven. So whenever you give to the poor, don't sound the trumpet as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and on the streets, but be applauded by people. Truly, I tell you, they have their reward. Jesus is entering into a new segment of the Sermon on the Mount, and the theme for the next few verses is going to be this idea that when you go to do something, don't do it so that you get the applause of the crowd. Don't do it so that you get the response of the people around you. Because when you do it so that you get the response of the crowd, that is your reward in itself. When I post a photo so that everyone knows that I went out and got to do something great today, my reward comes back to me in the feedback of likes and of comments, of shares, maybe even of promotional ads that will distribute to me a sellout fund if I get enough people following along with me. But that is the reward that I get. The reward that I get can come from those who I do it for. But Jesus is telling them, when you go out to do these things, don't do it so that you can be seen by people. Don't do it in a way where your reward is just from the applause that you get or the admiration that you get. Don't do it in such a way that it's because you want people to look on you with good and kind and upright eyes. Do it in a way that you do it for your Father in heaven. Do it in a way that you say, God, if no one sees me doing it, I'm doing it for you, because the one that you do it for is the one who is able to reward you. And we want our rewards to come from heaven. We want our rewards to come from the one who is able to reward us in ways that a light could never reward me. The one who can reward me in the way that an applause from you could never reward me. Hebrews says he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. I want to be seen as someone not who diligently seeks after the affirmation of my neighbors. I want to be seen as someone not who diligently seeks after the applaud of the crowd. I want to be someone who diligently seeks for his approval. I want to be someone who diligently seeks for his ways, who diligently seeks in the ways of God, because he is the one who will reward me in good time. And Jesus says to them, you could get up and you can do it for the crowd, or you can get up and you can do it for the Father in heaven. And he gives them these three whenever you statements. He tells them, whenever you give, whenever you pray, whenever you fast. Now, there is an assumption in this language. There is an assumption that you will be giving. There is an assumption that you will be praying. There is an assumption that you will be fasting. Jesus apparently thinks that it is so much part of the life of a follower of God that he doesn't have to clarify for them, you should be giving, and you should be praying, and you should be fasting. He doesn't make it optional for them and tell them, if you decide to give, and if you decide to pray, and if you decide to fast, rather he tells them, when you give, when you pray, when you fast, there is something about life walking with God that he assumes that giving, prayer, and fasting is part of the equation. And as he begins to talk to them about these things, he's telling them, there are ways that I do not want you to participate in it. He tells them, when you give, don't do it in a way that sounds the trumpet so that everyone looks at you and knows that you're giving now. Now, that's a probably pretty obvious phrase, and you think, like, yeah, who's going around blasting a trumpet in front of them, letting people know that they're giving, bringing a parade all the way down on their way to the giving box or every time they bring their app out? What he's referring to specifically is that it was customary for a giving receptacle to have on the top of it either an actual horn from an animal or a cone-shaped sphere that would then lead into the giving. And while most money of the time was coins, people would come and would put their giving into this trumpet, horn, cone-shaped device. Now, it was used to be a safety barrier to prohibit people from also sticking their hand in the giving and helping themselves to some of the giving. Apparently, honesty is also part of the human condition that did not show up in the last 100 years. But there were people who would go to give, and rather than just dropping their giving in the coins, in the cone, dropping their giving in the horn. If you've ever seen a sphere, you can drop your giving in a cone like that in such a way that it also becomes a noise and a cacophony, in such a way that it rattles and it spins the whole way down so that everyone can see how much you have tossed into the giving on your way. Jesus tells them, don't give in a way that it draws attention to yourself. Don't give in such a way that it needs to be announced to everyone who's around. Have you ever seen these things? I'm sure none of you have ever done it, but it's like somebody goes out and does a good deed in the community, and then because we have to post every single thing that happens in our life, it's like, hashtag selfie, bought this man a sandwich today. Wow. Thank you for announcing your giving to the world. Know that your reward has been received in the people that think that you're awesome. Or have you ever had this where, like, maybe someone has given you clothes or given your kids clothes or given you something that you get to use now, maybe something that you enjoy that you had mentioned, and they were like, hey, let me give that to you. And you think, this is awesome. But then every time you wear that jacket, they have one of those little comments for you like, that's a good looking jacket. I like that jacket. Where'd you get that jacket? And you're like, this is the jacket you gave me. Thank you for the jacket. They have to announce their generosity so that it can be remembered by you and by whoever is around. Jesus is telling them, this is not the way that you give. He tells them, when you pray, don't stand up in the midst of the synagogue. Don't stand up on the sides of the streets and speak with loud and rambling words. You don't need to go on and pray in a way that draws attention to yourself. He tells them, when you go to fast, you don't have to mar your faces and walk around and make sure that everyone knows that you're so hungry because you're suffering for the Lord this week. You don't have to announce it to everyone and everywhere that you go. What Jesus refers to this as three times in the next several verses, he uses the word hypocrisy. He says, don't be like the hypocrites. They get up and they announce themselves. Don't be like the hypocrites. They get up and they talk about what they're doing. They make a spectacle of themselves. And no doubt hypocrisy has been a great mar and does a great hindrance to our faith and to the spreading of the Christian message. And Jesus is telling them from the very beginning, don't be like the hypocrites who get up and do it for the attention. But hypocrisy, so we're clear, is not me grappling with my faith and still wrestling with my humanity at the same time. Hypocrisy is not I'm grappling with my faith and I'm messed up somewhere along the way. Hypocrisy is not, I fell short of the glory of God and I fell short of what my goal and my prize for myself was. Hypocrisy is not that I claim to be a believer and guess what? My humanity still shows up sometimes. Sometimes we claim for hypocrisy what is not hypocrisy at all. It is living in the here right now and falling back into grace because I need it so desperately. The word hypocrisy comes from the Greek word hypokritis. They're very similar. That's why I could remember it. And that word was a word that meant one who dresses up and acts in the Greek theater. Jesus tells them, when you get up, and you give and you pray and you fast and you're doing it for the crowd. You're like someone who comes out onto the stage and they put on a coat that is not their own. And they make up their face in a way that is not their own. And they become a character that is not who they truly are. And they come out so that everyone can see how loudly they pray and with what grand words that they pray. And they say all of the right things and they give in a way so everyone can pay attention and they want everyone to see their piety and they want everyone to see the way that they fast and they have put on a character. But when they leave the stage of the public eye and when they leave the stage of you being able to see them and they go back into their home, they take the wig back off and they take the mask back off and the cloak comes back off because it's not their own. And the character that they were out there gets hung back up until the next time you can see them. And the next time you can applaud for them. And the next time you can cry, encore, encore, for this great character that they have become. He says, hypocrisy is not when you fall short from time to time. Hypocrisy is when you pretend to be what you are not. When you come out and act like you are something externally that has not become who you are internally. And Jesus says, that's not what I want for you. Rather than giving in a way that draws attention to you, I want you to give in a way that is subtle. Give in a way. The allusion he uses is where your right hand and your left hand don't know what each other are doing. Give in a way that is, have you ever seen somebody when they give somebody a tip in that real sly way? You know, like they've got money hidden in their hand and then they just go up and they're like, thanks so much for your help today. And you walk away and you're like, they just slid a 20 in that man's hand over there. And nobody else even noticed it. And no, but Jesus is like, this is how I need you to be. I need you to give in a way that if nobody ever even sees it, you know that you gave into something. I need you, when you go to take care of the poor, do it in a way that you can give to them and still honor their dignity at the same time. In a way that says, I still see you as a person who doesn't want it blasted out everywhere that I came and celebrated and gave you a meal today. But I want you to give in such a way that you remind yourself that I'm not giving for the applause of the crowd. I'm not giving to see if you think that I'm great because I'm so generous. I'm giving in a way that nobody else might ever see it, but I know that my Father in heaven sees it. I'm giving in a way that I don't have to talk about how much I gave, and I'm giving in a way that I don't have to trumpet out and blast out how much I gave. I'm giving in such a way that it just subtly, quietly, gently comes in and supplies the need. And God sees it. And I trust that He is a rewarder of those who diligently seek Him. He says, when you go to pray, you don't have to stand up and use all of the words that you've ever learned and start using words that you never use in real life anyway. You ever hear people pray and you're like, you halfway speak English on a regular basis. And they get up to pray and they're like,
and from the auspices of heaven, from the great Lord on high that has reacheth down. When do you know about reacheth? Ever. Thus saith. Thus? When do you use thus? You don't know the difference between who and whom. You get your theirs mixed up. Talking about thus saith. Calm down. You don't have to pray in a way that is a character of who you are not. He says, instead, when you get up to pray, go into a secret place. He says, go into a hidden room in your house. Go into a place where you can pray and find out, do I pray so that people see me praying, or do I pray because my heart is to speak to the Father? And he tells them, he gives them a model for prayer. He says, pray in this way. Not use these words, although the words themselves are powerful. He gives them a template, a model for prayer. We refer to it today as the Lord's Prayer. It starts this way in Matthew 6 and 9. It says, therefore, you should pray like this. Our Father in heaven, your name be honored as holy. This is the paternal and the presence. That when we come to pray to God, we first acknowledge that it is our Father. That he is ours collectively as part of the family of believers, and that he relates to us first and foremost as a loving, good, everlasting Father. That we can come to him with the confidence of a child interrupting their parent. Nobody is more happy to interrupt me when I am speaking to someone else than my children. They are confident and unaware of the inconvenience that it is. You should go to God with that kind of confidence and unawareness. That God, I am coming to you because you are a loving Father. Then we invoke and celebrate the power of his presence, that he is holy, that he is hallowed, that he is separate. We exalt his name and we recognize that his presence would dwell among us. We begin with acknowledging the paternal and the presence. And then in 6 and 10, it says, your kingdom come and your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. We acknowledge the priority of what we're talking about. That my priority is your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. That before I get into anything else, Jesus, before I get into any of the things that I might request, before I get into any of the things that I need, can I just say that the banner over my prayers is only if it's within your will, God. Only if it makes earth look a little bit more like heaven, God. Only if it aligns with what you're trying to do in this moment and this season. God, I have some things that I'm going to ask for. And God, I have some things that I want. But before I get into any of that, I want to remind myself that my priority is you. My priority is your kingdom come. My priority is your will be done. So before I say any of that, just let me remind me and remind you, God, that my caveat is for any of that, only if it lines up with your will and your plans and your purpose for my life in this moment and seeing your kingdom come. Then he says, give us our daily bread. This is our provision. That God, I am reminded that I need of you. That I need you to provide in my life. That I don't have it all within myself. That I don't have it all by myself. That I need you to provide hope for this day. I need you to provide direction for this day. I need you to provide sustenance for this day. I need you to provide answers and resources for this day and for this moment. And that I get to come to you and ask for your divine provision in my life, that I expect that you are able to supply all of my needs according to your riches in heaven, that I believe, God, that you are delight in giving good gifts to your children, that I can come before you and ask for your provision to show up in this day for me, God. And then it says, and forgive us our debts, as we also forgive our debtors. This is the pardon that we ask for, that we come before God in prayer acknowledging that I have places that I have fallen short, and I acknowledge that there are people who have things that are against me, and I want to release them into forgiveness, God, in the same way that I ask for your forgiveness to come into my life. If you've been a believer for a while, let me remind you that asking for his forgiveness is a thing that we do wants to come into eternal relationship with him, and it's also a regular practice of the life of the believer, of coming before and saying, God, what is it in me in this day that is still not lining up with who you are? What is it in me in this day that I know I came short? God, in this day, I know that I didn't follow through on the thing that I said that I would do. God, in this day, I know that I slipped back into old habits, and it reminds me that I need your forgiveness every day, God. I need your pardon in my life every day. And when I live with a closeness to how fragile I am and how desperately I need his forgiveness, it makes it easier and quicker for me to say, I know that they offended me when they said that, God, but I'm not going to carry that with me. I'm going to release that forgiveness over their life. God, I know that they did me wrong and that they said they were going to pay me back and they haven't paid me back, God. But I'm going to release forgiveness in their direction. I'm not going to carry that and hold on to that because I need your forgiveness and I want to release your forgiveness to others in the same way. And then he says, and do not bring us into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. This is the power that comes through the infilling of the Holy Spirit. That the ability to resist temptation, the ability to resist the one. It says in Genesis that sin is crouching at your door and its desire is to have you or to overcome you. And it's not by my own power. It's not by my own discipline. It's not because I'm so good at holding on. It's because of the power that exists on the inside of me. It's because there is a power that comes from the heavenly places to say that there is a power to resist the evil one. There is a power to cast out the evil one. There is a power in me. There is a light that is in me that has overcome the darkness. And Jesus gives them a model. And when he walks them through, he ends at the end of it and says, I want you to be reminded that you have a power on the inside of you to resist the evil one. And when you go to pray, pray in this way. Because I'm assuming that prayer is part of your life. I'm assuming that prayer is part of the life of the believer. But getting up to pray doesn't have to be words that you've never known, and it shouldn't be getting up so that others can see you. Getting up to pray should be to bring me back into alignment with God for what's happening in this day, in this moment, and in this season of my life. To say, God, in today, I need you here. And then he says, when you go to fast, do it in this way. Fasting is refraining from some or all foods for the purpose of growing spiritually, for building up the inner part of who we are. Fasting is a meaningful part of the life of a believer. And Jesus says to them, when you fast. Which means that he assumes that the people who are the people of God, he assumes that his followers will participate in fasting. There is regularly less agreement on this than there is on the prayer and on the giving. I feel that you were excited about praying. Most of you were excited about giving. And you were like, you sure he talked about fasting? I remember Jesus saying something about him not fasting while he was there. Yes, he did. And then they fasted after he ascended into the throne on heaven, which is where he currently is, which is why his believers and his followers practice fasting as a way to build up our inner person. In fact, it's why later this month we have 3 days corporate fast coming up. Because a couple times throughout the year, we like to participate in fasting. I got one agreement in the room. Participate in fasting all together. We like to come together in a time where we are corporately strengthened and focused on something together. And at the end of this month, I think the 25th, 26th, let me get the dates right. I haven't needed these notes one time, but I will give you these dates wrong. August 25, 26, and 27. It's a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. At the end of this month, we're going to participate in 3 days of fasting together. We'll come together for our regular Wednesday corporate prayer on that Wednesday as we push into this end part of the year to say, God, we want to be those who say, your kingdom come. And when he tells them to go into the time of fasting, he says, you don't have to let everybody know and you don't have to mar up your faces. In fact, what I want you to do is I want you to get up and I want you to wash your face and I want you to put some lotion and some oils on your face and I want you to go about your day and go about your life in such a way that nobody actually has to know that you're fasting. You don't have to announce it when you come in. You don't have to go in such a way that you're like, oh my gosh, are you eating lunch today? I'm not having any lunch today. He says, no, you can just go in and go about your life. You can just go in and carry on like you normally would. Bring yourself in with strength, because if you go in such a way that people go, wow, you haven't eaten any food in 2.5 days? You're amazing. I could never. You're like, I know. I am pretty amazing. Most people never do this. And congratulations, you have received your reward. The feeling of feeling superior. The feeling of your neighbor thinking you're awesome. But if you want to fast in a way that your reward comes from heaven, he says, if you want my reward for your life, if you want a reward that the Father in heaven sees, then fast in a way where no one would ever guess that something different's going on about your life. Fast in such a way that you still show up with a little bit of strength. Fast in such a way that you still show up with a little bit of energy in your life, because you don't have to draw attention to the fact that you're doing something different. You can just do it because it's what God asked you to do. He says, when you go to give, when you go to pray, and when you go to fast, don't do it for others. Do it for the Father in heaven. Now, let me give you a little bit of pastoral advice, which is don't be weird. You can take that pastoral advice any day of the week, anytime you want. But he's not saying, pretend you're not doing the things you are doing so nobody ever knows that you're giving. Christians can get weird real quick. And suddenly somebody's going to be like, oh, are you participating in the fast next week? And you're like, I don't know. I can't talk to you about it now. Don't be weird. Because Jesus also talks to them about times that they give and should encourage one another in their giving. We can read throughout the New Testament and see that they gave together corporately, so they obviously saw one another giving. All of the Gospels record that it was the women who financially supported the ministry of Jesus, which means that they must have known that the women were giving. but it's that the direction of their giving was in such a way that they didn't do it to be noisy, and they didn't do it to be loud, and they didn't do it to draw attention. They did it to be seen by God. They did it because it's what He desires of them. They did it in a way, it's more about your heart check than it is about what's going on the outside. What Jesus is telling them is that when you keep doing things in a way that draws attention to yourself, then the attention that you get is the reward in itself. But what I want for you is not to get your reward here. I want you to get a reward in heaven, which means that we shouldn't be gaudy, and we shouldn't be loud, and we shouldn't be attention seeking in the way that we practice our giving and our praying and our fasting. But rather, as much as we do things in the public space, you better have some things that are in the secret space as well. As much as you come and you praise His name in the corporate gathering, which is good and is right, you better have some praise that happened in the secret place of your life as well. I hope that there's some giving that you give that stirs and that encourages one another's giving, but I also hope you have some giving that happened in a secret place of your life, some giving that happened in a way that nobody else saw it. I hope you participate in the fast, and I hope every one of us can celebrate, but I hope there are some times that you refrain from some things just because it's between you and Jesus, and nobody knows that you cut off sugar for 3 months because He told you, I want you to lay this thing down before me. There have to be some places, and my hope is that in a time that celebrates everything we do for each other, and in a time and in a moment that is so hungry for the likes and the shares and the applause and the comments of others, that props up my ego and props up my identity on what it is that you say about me, that we would have a hunger for His secret place as well. Galatians 1:10 says, am I now living to win the approval of men or of God? Because if I am still living to win the approval of men, I cannot be a servant of Christ. When I live to win your approval, then the weight and the sway and the stability of my life moves with the opinion of the crowd. And 1 week this is hot, and next week it's not gonna be. And so I don't ever know, is it fun? Is it cool for me to be posting my prayers online, or is that not cool anymore? Is this great that everybody's celebrating how we're out doing Share It Wednesdays and now it's not anymore? And I don't know, should I be doing pay for the person behind me, or I'm not doing that anymore? Because I used to think it was fun and generous, but now people are complaining about it's inconvenient. And if I'm doing it for the crowd, then I'm not sure if I should do it or not. But when I do some things because they're in the secret place, then my approval isn't based on your opinion. The stability of my life isn't based on your opinion. When the winds of your opinion sway and change, because remember, I'm building a life that is built for rain. I'm building a life that is built to withstand every single season. And when I do my giving and I do my praying and I do my fasting, and it's for your opinion, then as soon as the wind of your opinion changes, the stability of my house starts moving. But when I do some things because I was in the secret place with the Father, and I got in a hidden place with you, Jesus, and I said, I just have to pour out my love before you, and I don't know why, but you said to give money here, and I don't know why, but you said to move some generosity there, and I'm not sure why, Jesus, but you said to open my table. And I didn't have to take a photo of it, and I didn't have to tell everybody about it. I just invited some younger people into my house and said, I just want to share with you what God is doing. And I just found myself up in the morning and late in the night and walking in my lunch praying before you. And I didn't have to call my girlfriend and tell her, girl, I was up early this morning praying. And I didn't have to call up my brothers and let them know, man, God had me up late last night. I just wanted to get in the secret place with him. I just wanted to be in a hidden place with him. I just said, God, whatever's not of you, let me lay it down, God. I put everything before you. Not because I need to tell everybody, oh, I don't do that anymore. Oh, I don't eat that anymore. Oh, I don't, just because God said, give it to me and lay it before me. And so I just laid it down before him in the secret hidden place, because I'm not going after the rewards that you can give me. I'm going after some rewards of being pleasing to the Father. I'm going after some rewards that are built up in heavenly places where moth and dust can't brought them away. I'm going up for some rewards that only he can give me. I want to ask you before we leave today, do you have some things in the secret place? Are there some things in the secret place of your life? Are there some hidden things in your life that nobody will ever know and nobody will ever see, but your Father in heaven sees them? We want to go after the secret place. We want to be found in the secret place. If that's your desire, will you just lift your hands before heaven? You can stand to your feet if you'd like to. We're almost done here. Saying, God, I want to be found before you. God, I don't want to be a hypocrite that puts on an act when I come out, dresses up as a character that I'm not. I want the depths of my relationship with you in the secret place to be far greater than whatever anyone sees in the public place. Let what others see be the overflow and the outpouring of a secret place with you, Father. God, I'm asking you to grow in our hearts, to grow in us a desire for the hidden things of you. God, we want to be servants of you, not servants of men. We want to be servants of your will, not servants of our own desires, God. I pray over your people that this is a hidden place, people, a people that are found in your presence, a people who don't do it to be seen by others, but a people who do it to be seen by you. God, make us pleasing before you. Make us pleasing before you, God. Pray it in Jesus' mighty name. Amen. And every person who's building their life for rain, can you just clap your hands this morning?